Mr. Aumerschen is the senior consultant at Man's Matters, the UK's leading non-invasive men's health clinic. He is interviewed at the Royal Society of Medicine by Mike Dilke of the National UK Health Radio.
My guest today is Mr. Aumerschen, and he's an expert on impotence. So, Mr. Aumerschen, thank you very much for joining me today.
You're welcome. Nice to be here.
So, you're an expert on impotence, and in fact, this is the first of a mini-series. We're going to have a few talks looking at this subject, and it's a large topic. You know, there's lots of different areas and reasons why men might be impotent. And the first topic is something called Peyronie's disease. Now, I've only just heard of that, so I guess a good first question would be, you know, what is it?
Well, Peyronie's disease, a condition or disorder where of the penis in which a fibrous plaque is formed, and it can cause the penis to bend, indent, or misshapen. The good news is the plaque is benign, non-cancerous.
Okay.
So not to worry too much about it, but you've got to do something about it.
Right. So it won't kill you, but it can ruin your life. It can ruin your sex life for a start. Let me ask a real basic question, though. You say plaque. What's that? Is that like a scar, more or less?
It is like a scar, and then that scar becomes a harder sort of fibrous plaque. That's what the plaque is. Normally the plaque is made of 30-40% calcification or calcium. The rest of it is collagen type 3. You can say a form of dead skin.
Okay. So does this condition hurt? You know, so when you're having sex, is it possible to have sex? Does it hurt? Does it hurt the man? Does it hurt the woman? What's the situation?
The condition has two medical stages. The initial stage is it's the acute stage or the active stage, and then the second stage, the chronic stage. In the active stage, most men have this pain associated with the formation of the plaque. It's inflamed, it's forming, it's getting worse, basically. At that point, yes, it's painful on erection, painful sometimes in flaccid position, painful in having sex.
Okay.
After 18 months, a year to 18 months, it becomes chronic. The pain tend to go away sometimes stays there, and become more of a tightness sensation or discomfort. But obviously the other side effects of this is the physical changes to the plaque, which I'll discuss in the next point.
Okay. Go ahead, discuss it now.
Okay. So that will lead us to the physical effects of Peyronie's disease. So we look at 7 points here. The first one is the penis shape. All plaques form in different ways and different depth and sizes and some superficial, some deep like an iceberg, some wide, some small. But they all have effects on the penis in terms of bending it to a certain angle, left or right, or mid-shaft upward or downward. Now, the classic shape is the banana shape. So it bends upward. That's the most classic one. Some rare ones where it bends downward, that's more problematic in having sex and filling up with blood. So that's the penis shape. The other point is the erection flow. If you have, for example, mid-shaft plaque, then it acts like a kink and a hose effect. It will actually limit or obstruct the blood flow. So you have erection problems or weakness.
Okay.
So that's what gives you erectile dysfunction, basically, or erection weakness. The third point, the shortness of the penis. The plaque can act as a sort of a knot, which will retract the penis backward. So you'll end up with a shorter penis than before. And then obviously because there's less blood flow, you'll have shrinkage as well. So the volume and the girth will go down in size. On the fifth point is the pain or discomfort or tightness kind of sensation. As I mentioned earlier, it's all this normally, you find this in the early stages of Peyronie's, the acute stage. But then some people still carry that sort of symptom throughout their Peyronie's disease.
So there can be, you know, there's pain involved with this, you know, because if it's a slightly different shape but it still works, you know, life can go on, presumably, with lots of people.
Correct, yeah, that's right. If there is pain, that will put you off sex anyway, and then you just don't want to have sex. The other point is reduced sensitivity. Obviously, the plaque can actually block blood flow to these areas, and if you have less blood flow to certain nerves, then those nerves will actually die off. And then you'll have no sensitivity or reduced sensation.
Okay. Yeah. So you know, this is pretty serious for the sufferers. How common is it?
It is actually more common than we think. Medically, it's been surveyed 10% of men have this problem. But I personally, when I see that, up to upward of 30 men a week, and I think it's over 10%, maybe double that, 20% right. of men have this problem. And there are causes for this problem. I can explain that.
Yeah. Well, let's just go look at the numbers. Presumably, it might be, you know, slightly embarrassing to admit to having. So if you're filling in a survey or what have you, I don't know how these numbers are arrived at, it could be quite possible to underestimate.
Absolutely. I mean, we have loads of men who have come to me to my clinic and destroyed, really, their life. They're psychologically destroyed as well, physically. Men in general, they don't like to talk about it to anybody, not even their closest friends, let alone the GP. They don't want to go to GP, so they go online looking for help.
I can imagine. So if they go online looking for help, what are they likely to find?
Well, this is the problem with Google. You know, you Google Peyronie's, you see surgeries of botched surgeries and blood and penis being cut open by knives, and it looks horrific.
This is going to put the fear of God into anyone, isn't it?
We normally suggest people go to the NHS website first, because that's got a basic good information on Peyronie's. But more likely the traditional pathways to that.
We're definitely going to come on to what to do about it. But what about the causes? You know, so it seems quite common. You know, that there must be a few different causes. I don't know.
I personally put them in three different categories. The first category is injury or traumatic nature. So that means during sex, if the penis comes out and hit the wrong angle, it will bend or fracture. That can cause a scarring, and that scar, normally it heals by itself, and sometimes it doesn't. When it doesn't, nobody knows why. When it doesn't, it becomes or develops into a plaque. Right. So traumatic, not necessarily just sex. It could be a rugby tackle or football. I mean, the youngest Peyronie sufferer I've seen is 16 years old from a rugby tackle, and the oldest 92.
So, I mean, I played rugby, in fact, before I was up to the age of 18, that was all I ever did. I played rugby, and I got whacked a lot. And I'm just thinking, you've got to be really unfortunate or hit really hard for this to happen. You know, I mean, can it really happen during sport?
Indeed, it can happen. But as I said, it's really unfortunate. Some people recover. I mean, it all depends on your healing capacity. Some people don't heal very quickly or they heal wrongly. And that's something... It's difficult to predict and difficult to control.
Right. Actually, just thinking back to my rugby days, I can remember getting tackled. I was running full pelt. Someone tackled me head on, and I had a bruise on each thigh from his shoulders. So probably more by luck than judgment, I'm not one of your patients just now. Because, you know, at the time, I was knocked out, actually. But, you know, I recovered, and, you know, I was a kid. I was fine. So, yeah, maybe, thankfully, I could be a patient. So, all right, so it's more common than we know, and actually sounds, you know, relatively easy to get, and during sport and sex and all sorts of
That's
other...
Right. The second category will be lifestyle and chronic illness related of a vascular nature. That means if you have less blood flow to the penis, then you're at a higher risk of developing Peyronie's.
And so what can cause that then?
Diabetes, right. For example. You know, we can go into diabetes later, more details. High blood pressure.
High blood pressure. Wouldn't that mean that there's like more pressure forcing the blood around the body?
No.
This is a man in the street question here.
High blood pressure over time, it will actually damage the lining of blood vessels. When the blood vessel lining damage, they become more predisposed to microplaques. So they actually build up plaques. So they narrow. So there is less blood flow. And that can block the blood vessels. So that's how it develops.
Okay. All right. So we've got diabetes, high blood pressure. What about if you drink too much? I mean, there's the old, oh, yeah, he's got bruised droop kind of thing. Is that related?
Yeah, basically, alcohol is a funny one, actually. It's a contradiction there. Because when you're a young man, you know, you drink alcohol, it dilutes the blood, it makes the blood thinner. So you actually have a harder erection, which is great. But as you drink more over the years, it has the opposite, the ugly side of this, the opposite effects. It will actually damage the lining of blood vessels.
So Macbeth was right. Was it the, what did Porter say? Provoketh the desire, but taketh away the performance, something like that. Okay, I'm not trying to pretend I know all Macbeth's plays. By the way, I'm not terribly well read. Sorry, go on. I interrupted.
So the other thing is smoking. Obviously, that's part of lifestyle, you know. And smoking's got almost like 5,000 alien substances in 10 seconds in your blood, and that can actually damage the lining of blood vessels. So anything to do with blood vessels, yeah? The third category is genetics, yeah? Genetics, have you seen people with contracted or bent fingers into their hands?
I'm not sure I have, actually, yeah. But maybe it's because I haven't really been looking.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see sometimes people, their fingers pulled in, and there's like a tightness tendon. That's called Dupuytren disease. It's a genetic disorder. And if you have that, or your relatives, or your dad, or your granddad have it, then it's very likely you'll develop that in the penis, the fibrous plaque.
Okay.
Yeah. So any sort of...
So that's a genetic type thing?
Genetic connective disorders. That sort of thing.
Is that terribly common in your experience? One of the more common reasons for having it?
It is common. Actually, in fact, it's common with Viking genes and Scandinavian genes.
Okay, all right. Okay, so there's some of the reasons why people might have that. What about some of the... Yeah, because I can imagine this can be terrible psychologically on a sufferer, and you might feel a bit lost. You know, you don't really want to mention it even to your closest friends. But what sort of... psychological effects have you sort of experienced your patients having?
Right, it really stresses them out. So it stresses you out, and then it leads to depression, it leads to anxiety, or more like performance anxiety. So the man will think, oh, my penis looks disgusting. And that's what he thinks. He thinks his partner will think his penis disgusting, and then therefore it will affect sex. Basically, the partner might actually think it's disgusting. I've known men who their partners left them because they developed Peyronie's, which is really sad. You know, it tells you all about the relationship. So,
yeah. All right, so it can have far-reaching effects, really.
And obviously, feeling inadequate, feeling alone. As I said, relationship problems, you know. I mean, the penis, if it's badly bent, it can cause pain to your partner during sex. So that can stop sex or you know, reduce it. Yeah.
Okay. So presumably you've helped men overcome a lot of these issues by solving the problem for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. But as I said, the problem is men don't support men. I do. I support them. But in general, men, they don't go and tell their friends about it because they might laugh at them. They might just cover their ears and say, oh, it's too much. It's disgusting. I don't want to know about it.
I can imagine it being a very difficult topic to, you know, bring up with your friends or, you know, ask for help or advice or what have you, which is why we're talking about it here, actually, let's face it.
Like women. I mean, women with, let's say, with breast cancer, they'll have the whole community and friends around to help them, and men don't, unfortunately.
All right, so we've talked a little bit about, you know, what it is, how common it is, how it can be caused. What about... the topic that I suspect sufferers really want to know, what can we do about it?
Right, okay, so are you talking about the support here?
Or? Well, support, the possible support, and, you know, and also and possible treatment.
So in terms of support, unfortunately, there's very little. No UK charities specialise in Peyronie's, and the traditional sort of pathways, GP, and then from GP to urologist. Unfortunately, with the pandemic at the moment, you're looking at backlogs of up to 2 years before you've been seen. Because the way the NHS sees it, it's not a life-threatening. Therefore, COVID comes first, and then your penis is not important as long as you're not dying.
Yeah. But to a large extent, I can get that.
Like, to any man, a penis to a man, it's his life, really.
No, I mean, there's, yeah, I mean, I'm not a sufferer, but I'm sure if I was, I would want it fixed as soon as was possible, for sure.
We're looking at the treatment options. You're looking at traditional approach. You're looking at the new approach. The traditional approach, basically, you go to your GP, and there are brilliant GPs there. Well, they know about it. Some GPs don't know about it because they just treat thousands of different medical conditions. They're not specialists. So in that case, you know, get yourself privately referred to a urologist. Urologist is specialist in men's health as well. However, by the time you see a urologist, you're talking months. Yeah. Normally,
to see one of those, you're going to have to get referred by your GP if you're going via the NHS, aren't you?
You have to be referred by a GP. And then after they've seen you, they tell you, take vitamin E, which is antifibrotic, and leave it for a year and a half. It might go away by itself. Unfortunately, what I see is it doesn't go away. It gets worse. I normally say, I have different sort of take on this. Don't leave it. I think, deal with it. Dealing with a smaller problem, better than dealing with a bigger problem. That's how I see it personally.
Yeah. And so what does vitamin E do? How does that help?
There is some very weak evidence that vitamin E can help for scarring, for example. You know, superficial scarring. They use it on superficial scarring. And as I said, the fibrous plaque is a form of scar. There is a weak evidence that can be it can go into the blood and it can get to the penis and hopefully help with the plaque or get soften the plaque. Yeah, that's the evidence. They normally leave you for a year and a half with vitamin E and maybe a penis pump to just increase blood flow.
Hang on, you're going to have to describe that. It sounds intriguing. A penis pump.
Yeah. Okay. A penis pump is a hollow sort of tube where you pump air out and you insert your penis in it and pump air out. And what it does, like cupping, is it basically increases blood flow into the penis and you get what I call an artificial erection. You get an erection, but not by arousal, but by suctioning the blood in. And that the idea of this, you need more blood flow into that area to help with the healing of the scar.
Okay, I mean, that sounds a bit more like a torture device than actually a device that will work and help. Does this thing actually work?
I can give you a lecture on this.
Okay, just not a whole lecture. We'll have the shortened version, please. Right, okay.
I think it helps with erection problems. In certain conditions of Peyronie's, I'll be more specific, with indentations, where the plaque is not a curvature, but more of an indentation, then yes, it can help a bit. That's right. It helped a bit. Yeah, but it's tedious. It's you have to use it for hours a day, not 10 minutes. We're talking, you know, up to 4 hours in one go.
Okay, this is frankly sounding slightly peculiar, but yeah. Certainly tedious. Yeah, I mean, people really got enough time. All right.
Okay.
What else might we do? What about surgery? Do people resort to surgery?
95% or even more of men that I've met, they don't want surgery. And I tell you, I'll explain the surgery options here. Surgeries, by cutting your penis open and getting rid of the plaque, I tell you, there are three different types of surgeries here. You've got the one which is a Nesbitt technique or a plication, where if the penis bent to, let's say, to the left side, right, so they're going to work, they're going to make an incision on the opposite side, the good side. And they pull it backward to make it straight.
Okay.
So the plaque's still there. The plaque doesn't go away. I'm making the penis straighter, but the plaque's still there. Now, the problem with this, you will end up with very likely a shorter penis, up to 2 inches shorter.
You might still have blood flow problems, actually, if you've still got the plaque, possibly.
Exactly, yeah, because the plaque can get over-calcified or ossified, and then they become more of a blockage. That's right. So that's one surgery. Second surgery called grafting. Now, grafting, what they do is they cut out the plaque. Now, let me explain this. It's very important to understand how this works. When you have an erection, you have two structure cylinders that fill up with blood like a sponge. And that's when you get an erection. Those two cylinders are covered in a sheath or a film. It's called the tunica albuginea, that sort of sheath. That elastic enough, it expands with the cylinders, but it's hard enough to keep them together. Yeah? Okay. Now, when they have grafting, they cut out because the plaque is not in the cylinders. It's actually in that sheath most of the time. Yeah, they cut out a portion of that sheath and they patch it up with a pig skin or a skin from the inside of your cheeks. The problem with this, nothing at the moment, currently, nothing compares to your natural, you know, the durability and elasticity of your structure, of your tourniquet Virginia. So you will end up still with some sort of tightness or discomfort, or even scarring. Anything to do with cutting, you'll have.
It's going to make scarring, isn't it? And that's exactly. The problem in the first place.
In the first place, exactly. So that's the second surgery. The third surgery, and I think this is probably my preferred option for people with severe problems, or severe curvature. I mean, the curvature we're looking at, anything between 10 degrees bend to 180 degrees.
Okay, so a U-turn, a complete U-turn. Exactly. That happens. Goodness.
Yeah, so in that case, I mean, penile implant is the third surgery, where they insert, instead of those natural cylinders you have, they put an artificial cylinders and a reservoir inside your body filled up with silicone and a third pump. You'll have a third testicle, basically, where you inflate and deflate the penis when you need to. So they probably cut out the plaque, but they'll or leave it. But you can control your erection with this.
Okay, that sounds different for sure.
It's different, but it's unnatural. You still lose a bit of length as well.
Right, okay. Just the very, I mean, the idea of surgery of any sort, I guess, is to be avoided. But probably most men listening to this are kind of wincing a little bit, listening to the description.
I had cancer myself, and I've recovered very well from it. I had to get it removed, cut out. So I had to have surgery for 4 hours. But I would say, in general, with our human bodies, the first approach should be non-invasive. The second approach, minimal invasiveness. The third approach, maybe, if I have to, invasive, which is surgery.
Sure. All right. Now, I know you've been working on something which is not surgery. It's non-invasive. Yeah. So tell us a bit about that.
Well, this is exciting technology, which is called focused shockwave therapy. Now, shockwave therapy has been used for decades to break kidney stones.
Yeah, that's actually where I've heard of it. I've got a friend who's suffered from kidney stones. It's quick, easy, painless, and
works.
Yeah, and for them has worked so far.
Yeah. So shockwave still used as a gold standard, you know, for kidney stone. They still use it, but what it is basically, the shockwave will break, as I mentioned earlier, the plaque itself. It's not like a kidney stone, because kidney stone almost 100% calcification, like stone, break, you know, can be broken easily. The Peyronie plaque, as I said, 30, 40% calcifications, that we can break with shockwave, okay? The rest of it is collagen, which is the most stubborn part of the disease. This is the problem. That collagen, or a dead skin type of tissues, collagen type 3, shockwave doesn't break it straight away, but it's generating new blood vessels in and around it. And that's what they call angiogenesis. And that will feed it with new oxygen, nutrients, and blood all the time and help it to restart and reheal and remodel itself.
So this shockwave treatment will promote blood vessel growth?
Yes, absolutely. It will, it's got something called angiogenesis. That's why one of the good side effects of having shockwave for Peyronie disease sufferers is they actually will have better erections for two reasons. One, we break the blockage and make it less of an obstruction, so you get more blood flow. The second part, you're creating a network of new blood vessels in the penis. The more blood vessels you have, the more blood flow.
Yeah. All right. So all this sounds very good, but the part of it that I've got to ask you about, because frankly, it scares me a little bit, you've got shockwave therapy. So this is sound waves that are strong enough, have enough energy to break up a kidney stone.
Yeah.
Now, having that pointed at a part of your body which is pretty sensitive and pretty important might concern some people. And just the name shockwave therapy is, you know, people might, yeah.
Now, shockwave therapy, the name shockwave comes from an earthquake, shockwaves. When you get an earthquake, you get a high energy sound wave that breaks shatter windows, yeah. When an airplane breaks the sound barrier, that you get sonic boom, you get shockwaves. Yeah. Now, technology has improved so much now to a point like iPhone. iPhone changes every year. You get a better technology. Yeah. Now, focused shockwave therapy is very different than radial shockwave therapy. Orthopedic physio, they use radial for tennis elbows, and they're not really shockwave. They're pressure wave. They're very painful. And the waves come divergent. They're not convergent. They're not focused. They're everywhere, yeah? With focused shockwave, if you think about it that way, and you probably haven't, nobody have experienced this, but you can imagine. If you get your arm out and on the road and you have a bus going fast and hit your arm, it's very painful, I can imagine. But if you do the same thing and you have a bullet traveling to your hand, it's actually less painful.
Okay.
More powerful.
Right.
But less painful. So I always say, from my experience and what I see, most men, initially they think it's going to be painful, but it's not. It's just a very slight discomfort. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so if people have this treatment, is it just a pop-in surgery, or do you have to stay in hospital for a night or two? How long does it take? What happens?
It's an outpatient appointment. So after the telephone consultation, which is 10, 15 minutes, free consultation I do on the phone, I establish if this is the right thing for you. You get to the clinic. We do a physical examination. And if we struggle to find the plaque, we normally refer for an ultrasound scan to make sure we know what we're dealing with. The treatment itself is about half an hour, and you'll get some very superficial skin bruising, and that will go away within 2 days, and then you carry on as normal. You can have sex the next day, no problem.
Okay. So it's one visit treatment, is it, or is it a few visits?
It's a medical protocol of 6 sessions once a week for 6 weeks. Yeah.
Well, this sounds like infinitely better than surgery. 4 hours a day on the penis pump, all this kind of stuff. So it sounds like it could help a lot of people. But are there other treatments?
At the moment, I personally think, now I'm going to be biased because I'm biased in terms of non-invasiveness. That's my bias. So in terms of non-invasive, I would say shockwave at the moment is the best. Okay. We normally add some other stuff to enhance it, and vitamins and stuff like this, to enhance the healing process. There are two research going at the moment. So one is to do with laser, which is a carbon dioxide laser. Now, that's not yet being published. It's going to be published in Canada in end of 2022. They want to know if the laser can break the collagen.
Okay.
And help it to break up faster and heal. We can't do this until we know it's safe, so we're waiting for this. The other exciting thing there is we're getting involved in, actually, myself and some other professionals and professors, using babies' umbilical cord stem cells and inject it into the plaque and the rest in the bloodstream. But we do still have to use shockwave to signal the area for a stem cell to go in there and do this miracle work, you know, of healing. Now, stem cells from babies' umbilical, they're very powerful in terms of, they give life, basically. They're healing sort of power.
There's a lot of research in all sorts of medical areas with this just now, isn't there?
There is a lot of research, but at the same time, there's a lot of restrictions from the government. And ethically, people worry about cloning the baby or using it in different ways. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's probably a topic for another discussion, actually, because there's some interesting stuff there. But back to impotence and Peyronie's disease. If people are listening and, you know, it's something that they have experienced and worries them and they have symptoms, what can they do now, first thing, to make that part of their life better?
Okay, so if you see your penis bending or pain, the first thing you want to do is go to your GP, really. Go to your GP, and your GP will tell you, will confirm it for you first, and then maybe refer you to urologist. But if you can't wait to get to urologist, then please visit the peyroniesdisease.co.uk website. It's a very comprehensive website on Peyronie's. And then you've got also a YouTube channel, Man's Matters, with an S, Man's Matters. Channel has got 26 videos on explaining Peyronie's disease and different conditions and problems.
Yeah. Does the NHS website have any info on it as well?
The NHS have And they should definitely have some information in terms of what is Peyronie's disease and what you do about it. And as I explained earlier, it will prompt you on the traditional pathways, how to deal with Peyronie's.
Okay.
Good. Right. I think that has kind of helped a lot of people. You've explained things very simply, and it's something, because something people don't talk about, people might find it hard to get information. So, Mr. Almishan, thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome. Nice to be here.
Thank you very much to my guest, Mr. Leon Almishan, this week, talking about male impotence and in particular Peyronie's disease. And of course, thank you to you for listening.
Man's Matters is Europe's leading non-invasive clinic for men suffering erectile dysfunction, Peyronie's disease, benign prostatic hyperplasia, and chronic pelvic pain syndrome. Visit the websites peyroniesdisease.co.uk and mansmatters.co.uk, or call 020 7205 2711 for more information.